and welcome to the Anti Football Podcast. My name is Chris. As always, I am joined by the lovely Harry Flynn, and we're both...
You've doxed me.
Eh?
You've doxed me.
Oh, well, I'm not... It's not like I've revealed your fucking IP address, is it? Jesus Christ.
I'm joking.
Yeah. Harry lives on fucking Matt Letizier Street in Southampton.
Oh, yeah.
That, try to think of any fucking famous people from Southampton. I couldn't think of any.
There's not a lot.
Yeah, I mean, we've got fucking Ricky from Kaiser Chiefs, and that's it for Keithley.
Who?
You know, Kaiser Chiefs.
The South African team, I know.
Eh?
The South African team, yeah.
No, they'd, I predict a riot. He was on Voice and all. He won at Judges on Voice for a bit, were Ricky.
Do you think I watched The Voice?
Well, I don't know. Do you watch The Voice?
No.
Ah, right.
Do you watch The Voice? It sounds like you do.
No, I don't. I just knew he was a judge on The Voice. I thought you might watch it.
Oh, yes. So that puts me... This is so tragic opening.
Yeah. Well, let's talk more about fucking reality shows. What reality shows are you watching at the moment, Harry?
I don't watch any. I only watch I'm a Celebrity, but I didn't watch last year's.
Did you not?
No.
I tell you what, I actually... You're going to hate me, but I actually really used to like watching Love Island. I thought it was decent until... You know, because they had, like, normal people, but then it got shit when they got, like, arrogant twats on it. Like,
oh, yeah, well... isn't that, like, linked to a couple suicide?
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, that's what I don't
know. I don't see how you can get rid of Jeremy Kyle's show, but you can keep Love Island on. I don't think that's a bit odd.
Aren't they doing, like, Love Island USA?
Oh, yeah, they do Love Island. It's everywhere. There's US one, there's a Canada one, there's an Australian one. It's a big global brand, is Love Island.
But why didn't they... Well, I don't understand why people didn't think, hey, let's change, you know, how we do stuff after, you know, Hannah took our life, you know.
Yeah, I know. It's not great. Yeah, like you said, this is fucking tragic. Jesus Christ, this might be a football podcast. yeah. Let's just talk about some shitty VAR, some shitty handball decisions instead of getting all sad.
Shit on Tony Khan as well.
Yeah, let's shit on Tony Khan. Let's shit on everyone. Let's just have a podcast where we just shit. How good would that be? And starting off with shit, you know, how the fuck can you give a penalty after the final whistle? Fuck me. Like, surely that is not allowed.
Yeah, I know.
It definitely was a penalty, but how can you give it when you've blown the final whistle? That's a lot of bollocks.
Agreed, yeah. Yeah, definite handball, but, you know, you called the game, it's over and done.
It shouldn't have even gone on that long. It should have been ended after Brighton got the equaliser.
Agreed, yeah. Joke.
Yeah.
Are they changing the handball rules, or are they just, you know...
Well, I think what they've done between last season and this season is they've done it so that, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's intentional or not. If your arm is in an unnatural position, which they deem to be level or above shoulder height, then it's a penalty, no matter, you know, how far, like, distance the ball travels, or... You know, whether you're even facing it or like that. Like, if your arm is above that height and it hits it, then it's a penalty.
I've got a graphic here, right?
This would be great for the listeners. Harry's got a graphic.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to read out the stats. So far it's been 26 games. 20 penalties have been awarded, 6 of which for handball. At this rate, we'll be heading towards 292 penalties awarded and 88 for handball. In the last 5 seasons, the most penalties given away in a single season was 106, 18 of which was for handball.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a lot of shit, isn't it?
Ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, and for once, you know, I actually have a bit of sympathy for referees, like, because they say they don't like the change, and like, when they've been like polled and stuff, they don't like the handball change. You know, players don't like the handball change. Managers don't like the handball change, and fans sure as fuck don't like the change. So why did they change it? You know, like, it's not the FA. It's like some like independent governing body like that's changed it. But it's just a load of shit.
Yeah,
and I feel like we are going to be having this conversation a lot this season. Because if you're going to give penalties, you know, like for the handball, I mean, we'll get into the worst one, which is, you know, Newcastle and Spurs. We'll get into that. But if you're going to be giving penalties for stuff like that, you know, then you're going to be giving penalties, you know, for most things, you know, like, yeah, it's just, it's so shy. We're going to be talking about this a lot this season, I can tell. It's going to be this season's VAR debate. Why don't they go look at the screens? Well, that'll be this year's version of that. It's just, oh, why? Football is an easy sport. Why do you have to make it so complicated and fuck it up?
They need to clarify offside rule as well. What makes you, because they're doing any body part of this. Could be a toenail and that's it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it is clear. It's just wrong, the offside rule.
Yeah. Don't they give an attacker's advantage?
Yeah, you'd think so. You'd think it'd be like, you know, the part of the body that hits the ball. Well, that's the part what's got to be onside or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Yeah. But as for the actual game, though, Man U were pretty shite. Like, yeah.
They're glorified penalty merchants.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm looking at this lineup and it is a big improvement from last week's backup. Last week's lineup. And the Manu Matic coming back in as well, I thought was a good move. I feel like neither McTominay or Fred can do Matic's role as well as Matic. But yeah, they just didn't have that much attacking impetus. I mean, I know they scored 3 goals, but you know, like, Brighton looked the far better side to me.
Yeah, they had an own goal and a penalty that shouldn't have been a penalty. I will give credit where it's due. Rashford's goal was really, really good.
Mm.
Also on Matic, I think he was very clumsy in the game. Very, like, the thing he got a yellow card for was on this.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I'll agree with you there. But what I'm going to argue with Matic is that they need someone like Matic to just sit in front of the back four. Just a purely defensive-minded midfielder. Because, you know, when they have McTominay, when they have Fred, or even if they had, you know, if they decided to go with a Pogba Van de Beek double pivot, there would be gaps exposed. So the Matic role is crucial to that Man United side. Especially after the restart, they were, you know, relying on Matic. He played really well. But I do feel like, you know, they could either do with replacing Matic or evolving their style so that they aren't as reliant on that Matic role.
Are they linked with anyone?
I have seen them linked, and I don't know how reliable this is. But I have seen rumours of N'Golo Kante to Manchester United.
Do you know them?
Mm. I feel like that would be a good move for all parties, to be honest with you. Chelsea would command a decent fee for him. Man United would get that Matic replacement, and Kante would be a starter in that Man U team, definitely, in that Matic role. Whereas for Chelsea, he's not a guaranteed starter.
Well, I think he's nowhere near his best.
Oh, no. Well, that's just because he's gotten older now. I mean, he's, what, 31? So, you know, there was a time, you know, 2 or 3 seasons ago where he's the best midfielder in the world. Or at least, you know, in the conversation, he was, you know, up there. But, you know, I feel like as he's gotten older, his engine, what he was famous for, has just gotten more and more worn out.
It's not so much that. It's the fact he likes to go forward when that has never been his strong point. I don't know why he's made that change.
Well, let me ask you this. Is that Kante? Or is it, which in my opinion is the more likely one, is it Lampard telling him to go forward to sort of fit his tactical style? I can't see Kante, you know, roaming forward if Lampard tells him to stay back.
Mm, we do need somebody who's just going to sit in front of the front line because our back line's terrible. But someone like a Matic would do well, but I don't rate him, even though that's a role we need, and obviously Man United need.
Yeah, I mean, It does allow. I do like that role because it allows, you know, Paul Pogba to have more freedom in this Man United team, which is, you know, obviously a good thing. But yeah, as for this Brighton team, I just want to go back to them a little bit. They were really impressive to me. Again, both wing backs, March and Lamptey, performed really well. You know, bombing down that left hand side, not just the left hand side, but bombing down both wings. And yet, like, Brighton are going to be more than fine. Could you see them potentially even pushing for top half, Harry? Because in these first three games for Brighton, they've been unlucky in losing to Man United and Chelsea, two teams who, you know, were expected to beat them. And they absolutely tore apart Newcastle. So, you know, what can you see from Brighton this season? Because I'm really impressed by them.
Yeah, same. I don't know, smacking the post five times does indicate that they lack a goal scorer outside of Maupay and Trossard. He is a direct player, but he does lack that impetus to finish. I think top half is definitely doable. Tariq Lamptey is going to be really important for them this season, whipping in crosses and got really good defensive stat attributes as well.
Let me ask you this. Out of Tariq Lamptey and Reece James, which one would you rather kept hold of? Because it was basically between them two for Chelsea.
I'll go James just because he scored this season. That's, so far, I go James. But that's nothing against Tariq Lamptey.
Yeah, I feel like Lamptey is really unlucky with the fact that England have so many good young right-backs. You know, you've got Trent, you've got Wan-Bissaka, you've got James... and as well as James, you've got, you know, the more experienced players like Walker and Trippier, who are both ahead of him. So I feel like he's really lucky there, Lamptey, because he's probably not going to get a sniff in that England team, even though he probably, in terms of ability, probably deserves to at least be within a shout for it.
Another player I really like is Alzate. I rate him. I didn't really know much about him, you know, last season. He was just sort of a nothing player, but I can see why he's started every game now. Because he's always on the edge of the box waiting for that rebound.
Yeah, I really like him as well. I feel like a midfield pairing of him and Adam Lallana could be really good. You know, should Lallana... stay injury free, which, you know, you can't rely on him to stay injury free, but should he stay injury free, we know that he's a very, you know, he's a very good player. You know, obviously not Liverpool quality, but he walks into most bottom half teams. So midfield with him being more of your creator and Alzate being your more dynamic midfielder, I feel like that would do really well.
Well, I really like Pascal Gross, so yeah, I don't know how you fit him in. But Solly March at left wing back, I don't really rate, because it took him however many attempts to finally get his goal, and it seemed like it was on accident.
Yeah, I mean, it did seem like he was very unfortunate, this game, Solly March. But overall, he had a really good game, I'd say, March. Overall, I'd say March had a really good game. It just seemed like he was unfortunate, when it came to, you know, finishing his dinner.
Yeah, but you could probably say that about Leandro Trossard, but he came much closer than Solly March did and still didn't get a goal.
Oh, yeah. You know, on nine times out of ten, you know, Brighton win this game based on these two performances. You know, they were extremely unlucky not to earn anything from either this game or the Chelsea game. I feel like they deserve to walk away with something from both. So, yeah, you know, based on these two performances, I could see Brighton having a much better season than they did last season.
Oh, yeah, agreed, yeah. Also, did Donny van de Beek's manager... his agent came out and said that Man United should have lost the game 7-1.
Yeah, I mean, that is probably accurate, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
On another day, that scoreline easily happens.
Shame.
Anyway, have you got all else to add on there with Brighton and Man U?
No, very lucky.
Extremely lucky. Right, we'll move on to Crystal Palace and Everton. Two teams going into this game with two wins apiece. And yeah, it was a very... it wasn't as impressive a performance from Everton as it was during the first two games, but they did manage to grind out a win with Calvert-Lewin, perhaps the most in-form Premier League striker this season, bagging as well as a Richarlison penalty. What did you make of this match?
Well, I think... Well, first half, obviously, this dictated it all. On the base of, like, I don't know where I was going with that. I think Everton deserved to get all 3 points. Both their informed players getting goals. And I don't know, this didn't seem like the Palace from the previous two games, particularly the one that turned up against Man United.
I mean, playing Eberechi Eze and Andros Townsend on the wing behind Ayew and Zaha, that's a very attack-minded team, especially against, you know, a team as good as Everton's. So I wonder if Palace were trying to maybe out-press or, you know, trying to use the pace of both wide men and the two front men to get in behind. You know, the Michael Keane and Yerry Mina aren't exactly the most mobile centre-halves. But that did end up leaving gaps defensively because it was such an attacking team. Like you said, they didn't seem on the game, is what I'll say.
Although I did rate, I mean, we've said about him before, Kouyaté. You know, getting in with the goals this time, thanks to an Andros Townsend assist. So it seems like he's gonna be a very important player.
With the injury to Gary Cahill, he has just slotted in basically in that centre half role, Kouyaté, and he's looked at home really in these first three games. I mean, he's looked very comfortable. I feel like, you know, we've seen a lot of players this season, a lot of holding midfielders transition into a centre back role, whether that's temporarily or permanently. You know, we saw Kouyaté, we saw Ndidi, we saw Fabinho this week, and last season we saw both Fernandinho and Rodri slotting at centre-half for Pep Guardiola's Manchester City. Can you see this as a trend that will continue? Or do you think these are just one-offs for trying to plug the gaps for injuries?
Yeah, one-offs for trying to plug the gaps. Because your full-backs are typically attack-minded, whereas holding midfielders are... They're going to stay back anyway, so may as well just stick them at the back. As we've seen with Fernandinho, Fabinho, and now Kouyaté.
I mean, he has just slid right in there as Kouyaté, and he plays, you know, really well this game. And the two front men for Crystal Palace as well, they didn't exactly have the best of times. I mean, it does seem like Wilfried Zaha, you know, actually cares now. Like last season, he didn't seem to care. But both him and Ayew struggled to get much during this game, to be honest with you.
Yeah, only one shot on target between them in the entire game. Meanwhile, Everton kept Guaita busy. He had to make three saves and then conceding the two goals. Attacks, they're actually both level, but it just seemed like Everton, every time they attacked, they looked like scoring, whereas Palace lacked that until Kouyaté got the equaliser.
Yeah, they do look very dangerous this season, do Everton. This finally seems like the season where Everton will kick on. I mean, I know last episode I criticised Everton quite heavily. But, you know, start of this season, you know, one of only three teams to get three wins out of three. They look like they've finally managed to flip a switch. Will they get Europe? I'm still not too sure about that. But they will definitely be contenders, which is something that you couldn't say about Everton these last few years. You can see the improvement under Ancelotti.
Yeah, agreed. I just think they do lack in squad depth because that midfield, you're literally going to be replacing them with Tom Davies, Sigurdsson, and I guess Bernard. Not really the best. And considering how the games are coming fast. And then you got all these cup games as well. Yeah, they're going to have to end up rotating at some point. And Gbamin just seems always injured.
Mm. Yeah, he's very unfortunate, definitely. Isn't Barmin. I do like Bernard. I think that he's a very good player. I mean, he's obviously not, you know, like James Rodriguez or, you know, Ducore levels, but I still think he's a very good player. I mean, we saw him last, was it Wednesday, against Fleetwood Town, getting a goal and an assist. So he's obviously, you know, got something about him, Bernard, but like you say, you take out Alan or Ducore from that midfield, and it is a vastly inferior midfield. So, yeah, that is perhaps one thing that Everton could improve on. But at the same time, you don't want to bring in, you know, six or seven midfielders in one transfer window.
Yeah. The thing is with Everton, they have spent a lot in the past few years. And, well, last season, where did they finish 11th?
I think they finished 12th below Southampton.
Oh, OK. Wow, that's bad. So the thing, I still think they need to address the issue in goal, even though Pickford hasn't made a mistake this season.
Well, I still think he should have done better for the Dion Garner shot against West Brom. Yeah.
That was the defence backing off as well. That was.
Yeah, it wasn't solely him, but no. I still feel like he could have done better.
Mm. Otherwise, I think Everton are destined for big things, even especially now with the top, some of the top six majorly underperforming.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, it is definitely a time that Everton could potentially capitalise. You know, last season we saw, you know, Spurs and Arsenal drastically fall off. And it looks like, you know, at the very least, that Arsenal look a lot better. You know, when Bale comes in, we'll see about Spurs. But we've also got, you know, Man United, Chelsea. Neither of those two look anywhere near close to they were last season. But you got to remember, we are only three games in. But speaking of Chelsea, you knew we had to get onto it at some point, so I'll just let you speak about West Brom 3, Chelsea 3.
That first half was probably one of the worst halves in Chelsea's history. I mean, absolutely awful from every aspect you can think of. Like, I mean, when Thiago Silva, of all people, make an error and it leads to a goal, you know it isn't your day. I mean, yeah, what is the point in playing Kante if he's not even going to stay back? He offered nothing in defence nor attack, and yet he's able to walk into this team because, what, he was good a couple years ago. Christensen was poor as ever. We should be looking to sell him, to be honest. Alonso was shit as well, and that led to him being taken off. Yeah, 3-0 down to West Brom at half-time. Although we have been 3-0 down to Burnley at half-time before, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that very well.
Yeah, I bet you do, yeah.
Year after you won the title, wasn't it? The first game of the season. It was a 3-2 win for us. Yeah. So at least this went a lot better than that. But, yeah, like, at least now you can see what I'm saying about West Brom being dangerous attacking-wise.
Yeah. Well, the second half, a lot better. We probably deserve to win it in the second half, to be honest, despite the many, many errors at the back that lead to a 3-0 loss to a team that I've picked to be, you know, rock bottom at the end of the season. But for what they lack in defence, they make up for an attack. So, I don't know, West Brom are going to be a bit of a funny team this season to watch. It depends how they do with teams around them. Who have they played? They've played us, they've played Everton, and they've played Leicester. So that's not really the best of ways to measure them against teams around them, because those teams are going to be fighting for the top six.
Exactly, yeah. And I mean, upcoming, they've got Southampton, Burnley and Brighton and Fulham. So those four games will give us a far better indication of how West Brom are going to fare this season when it comes to, how they'll do, whether they'll stay up. I mean, yeah, they have done decent in the transfer market, you know, obviously bringing in Dean Garner and Pereira on permanence, bringing Callum Robinson, Conor Gallagher on loan, I'm a big fan of.
He couldn't play.
He couldn't play, no. But I'm a big fan of him. And yeah, like, it will be interesting to see how West Brom do this season. I still don't think they'll stay up. I'd feel like the defence... I don't feel like the defence is solid enough to keep them up. And that's the main thing they need to sort out when you're a Premier League team, is your defence. Teams with a better defence will 9 times out of 10 finish better than teams with a better attack. That's just how it is. But that being said, I do like this West Brom side. I like, you know, both Pereira and Dean Garner on the wing. I like Robinson up front. I like Sawyers in midfield. I think he's really good as well. And yeah, they definitely do have potential. They definitely have the potential to stay up if they can sort out that defence. I mean, I don't know how Ivanovic is going to do, whether he's going to be able to, you know, sort of general that back line. I haven't followed his time at Zenit, so I'm not sure how, you know, much he's dropped off since his time at Chelsea. But yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see. As for this Chelsea team, yeah, it's poor. You know, like, we talk about Everton spending loads of money and being poor, but this Chelsea team is, you know, again, just very poor. Timo Werner having probably his worst game for Chelsea so far. He was, you know, very poor. Yeah, there's just, you know, in the second half, you did play quite well. But I just, you know, no, I just don't... Everyone was so full of praise for the work in the transfer market from Chelsea. But these tactics, they just don't seem right to me. They seem so off.
Understatement there. Yeah, just even talking about this game, Hearts... That's not the Chelsea we were expecting to get, considering the amount of money that we've spent. And the game last night, where we were on top and we still lost, it doesn't give me much hope for the forthcoming game.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, this season is that last season, you know, you had the transfer ban, you sold Eden Hazard. It was almost a sort of free hit for Frank Lampard and Chelsea. You know, no one was really expecting them to challenge for anything. But this season, Chelsea have by far spent the most amount of money in the Premier League, you know, by far. So the pressure is on for Chelsea to at the very least challenge for the title. And I can't see that happening, to be honest with you. You know, and if we get to, you know, January, February time and Chelsea... you know, nowhere near the title, they're having to fight for top four, you know, in a Europa League spot potentially. Could we see Frank Lampard be put under some pressure? Because we know that Chelsea are very prone to sacking managers frequently.
After last night's performance, that did cross my mind. Just even when we deserve to win a game, we can't even win a game. When we're absolutely crap, somehow we muster up a draw. It's just like, I'm not... I was excited before the season. Now I just want to get it over with.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. And I mean, to continue this depression ride for us both, we'll go on to Burnley versus Southampton. Yeah, it was just awful from us. There's no other way to put it. We were just absolutely shite. As best player by far was Charlie Taylor, because he was the only player who looked like he gave a shit. And Southampton, you know, managing to capitalise on the inexperience of Long and Dunn together through, you know, the lethal Danny Ings up front. And from that point on, they just stopped attacking because they realised they didn't have to attack. You know, this game really reminded me of the Norwich game towards the end of last season, but the difference is we weren't 2-0 up, we were 1-0 down and we showed nothing. However, I'm not too disheartened. You know, we were without James Tarkowski, we were without Ben Mee, we were without Jack Cork, we were without Goodmanson, we were without Brady, we were without Rodriguez, we were without Ashley Barnes. We were without a lot of first team players. And, you know, if Taki and me can't stop Danny Ings, then I don't expect Long and Dunn to. However, you know, if it's still like this in November, December time, I will start to be getting worried. We're seeing, you know, Taki, me, Barnes and Goodmanson are all back in training at the moment. Barnes actually completed two games for the under-23s. And Robbie Brady has been picked for the Ireland squad. So, you know, they can't be too far off as in terms of returning from injuries. So, yeah, it just, you know, it just hits home, this game. It hit home how badly affected we were by injuries because we had no one to bring on as well. The only two players who had any Premier League experience were Eric Peters and Matt Lawton, two, you know, fullbacks, you know. We had no strikers to bring on. We had no wingers to bring on, you know. So, yeah, please come, Americans.
Do you think Tarkowski will go to Leicester?
Well, if rumours are to be believed, Leicester have essentially wrapped up the deal for St Etienne's Fofana.
Oh, yeah. They have, yeah.
So, I doubt that they would go for Tarkowski and Fofana when they've also got Soyuncu and Evans there.
Yeah, I forgot about that, yeah. That's their record signing now.
Mm.
So, they obviously set themselves a budget and obviously didn't want to pay the 60 million that you set.
We didn't set 60 million.
How much was that?
It was 50. Ah. But realistically, if they bid 40, we would have probably accepted it.
Well, they got Wesley Fofana for 31.5 plus add-ons.
Mm.
So you probably would have said accepted 40 and then added-ons to make
it maybe. We'd have probably accepted, you know, 40 million including add-ons. So if they offered like 35 plus 5 million add-ons, we probably would have accepted that.
Do you think, what about West Ham? Do you think they'll step up their bid or not?
Well, the chairman's basically come out and said, you know, it's not going to happen.
Oh, okay.
I don't know whether it was Gold or Sullivan, but one of them went on Talk Sport and said the deal's essentially dead in the water because we were saying we want 50 and they said, oh, how about 29 million? No, we want 50. Oh, well, how about 30 million?
The Man United approach.
Yeah, no, we want 50 million. How about 31 million? You know, I mean, I can't knock them because we do the exact same thing to teams. But it is a little bit annoying when you're on the end of it. And yeah, you know, we were just struck a lot by injuries. So it'll be interesting to see within the next 2 or 3 weeks how we improve. I think the Brighton game and the Crystal Palace game, they're two must wins because by then we should have quite a few first teamers back.
That's two very informed teams.
Mm.
Minus this week, mate. Well, the last game week where they both lost.
Yeah, but if you take into account the players we should have back, they're two similar we're two similar teams on paper. And they fall in between, you know, games against Spurs and Chelsea and, you know, games against Man City, Everton and Arsenal.
Do we play you on Halloween?
It's around about that time. It might be on Halloween. Yes, it is.
Yeah, I thought that wrong about, yeah.
Yeah.
To be honest, at this rate, I expect you to win that.
Well, you know, it all depends who we get back, you know. I mean, like, at the end of the day, both Kevin Long and Jimmy Dunn are serviceable Premier League centre-backs, provided they are next to someone like Ben Mee or James Tarkowski. You know, if they're put next to a quality centre-back, then they're fine. But, you know, with each other, you know, they're not good, essentially.
Where was Tarkowski in the game?
Tarkowski had a toe injury.
All right, okay. I can't remember which England player it was, but he dropped a kettle on his toe and he had to put out.
Oh, I know you're on about. Oh, fucking hell, it's going to annoy me now. I know what you mean anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what were your thoughts on this game, Harry?
It was very boring. So
yes, I imagine that for the neutral, it was a very shitty game.
Yeah, so during the game, I went and watched Inter Fiorentina, which was
Yeah, I imagine it was. To be honest with you, I can't imagine many games worse than Burnley Southampton. The only one that I can think of anyway was Burnley Huddersfield, which had zero shots on target, if I remember correctly, in 2018, I want to say.
Did you even have a single shot on target?
Yeah, we had more shots on target than them.
Oh, it says Aberdeen's Jamie Langfield was rolled out of the start of the 2010-11 season after a kettle full of boiling hot water fell on his foot.
Right.
I thought it was like a bigger...
Well, I remember... I knew about the story anyway. Yeah, I mean, we did definitely have chances. I mean, we had 8 corners during the game. But, you know, like, we just didn't have the, you know, experience at the back. I'll say if we had Tarkowski and me back, we don't concede that goal against Danny Ings, and then it's a completely different game. So when, you know, those two come back, I won't be as worried, to be honest with you. Them two and Gudmundsson, they're the three key players.
I think you need signers because your team looks...
Yeah, I mean, well, the thing is, when we've got a fully fit team, the team looks good. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a weaker team than last season because we've replaced Endrick with Stevens. But it's still a relatively strong team.
Was Stevens going to play right midfielder then?
Well, no, but, you know, Stevens is the only player that's come in and Endrick's the only player that's gone out, so...
Oh, wait, speaking of right midfielders, you know that Gudmundsson?
Mm-hmm.
He used to be in Chelsea's academy.
Oh, was he? Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I found that out yesterday.
Oh, right. No, I knew we bought him from Charlton, but I didn't know he went through Chelsea's academy. Oh, right. Yeah, he's a very good player, Gudmundsson. He's just been unlucky with injuries, you know, throughout his career.
So pretty much it was a one chance game.
For Southampton, yeah, essentially. They just got a goal within 5 minutes and sat back. But I'm not gonna moan about that, you know. They did what they had to do to win, you know. That's what we do all the time.
Anti football podcast, so, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. That's what we named this style off. But yeah, it's, you know, it wasn't great from us, but I'm not too concerned. When the key players come back, I think we'll be... Harry Wilson is a potential incoming.
The probability of that happening go down by the day.
Really?
Went 60% in 5 now.
Well, I think the reason for that is that originally when the rumours come out, it was, Burnley are close to signing, you know, so-and-so. And then Burnley journalist came out and said, no, we're not close. We've just made inquiries about him. So I think that's probably why the probabilities have gone down. I still think that will probably, if I had to put a bet on. What's that?
Is it a permanent or a loan?
A permanent? Apparently Liverpool are looking for somewhere in the region of 15 to 20 million pounds. That's what?
That's how much he's worth according to Transfer Mark.
Yeah, and I won't want to pay much more.
58% to go to Burnley.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to put money on, I think it probably... we haven't had too many, like, substantial rumours during the course of this transfer window, and this feels like one of the actual substantial rumours. And, yeah, we'll have to see where it goes. And the American takeover as well is looking more and more likely every day. They've recently opened a bank account in Leeds. So, obviously, they've got plans up north, at the least. So, yeah, it's looking more and more likely as time goes on.
We need them to get it done before next Monday, because...
That's not going to happen. 100%.
Oh, right.
No, we aren't going to see, at least in the transfer market, we aren't going to see the effects of that this season. Because even if the deal does happen this season, it probably won't happen, because there's a lot of faffing around you have to do. It probably won't happen until, you know, November, December time. And I can't see them dipping into the pockets straight away for big players in January, especially when prices in January are extortionate anyway. So, you know, should the Americans take over, I can't see us feeling the effects of that until next season.
The next game, Leeds.
Yeah, what do you think of this, Harry? A very interesting clash.
Yeah, well, Leeds did look like they were going to win it, but Ramsdale made 8 saves. So despite the criticism he's had, he kept them in until pretty much till the end, until Bamford bundled in and finished. Mm. He got 3 goals in 3. Like, who would have?
And it'll be interesting to see if he can keep it up consistently this season, or whether it'll just be this season's Teemu Pukki.
Well, I'm sure they'll take someone. Rodrigo is absolutely crap. Nothing like the player he was at Valencia. He just seems lost when he goes for. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you say he seems like nothing like the player at Valencia. You know, was it 6 or 7 goals last season? So he wasn't exactly that prolific of a striker last season.
That's because he's not a striker, he's a right wing.
Rodrigo?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't seem to play out on the right, at the least.
Years ago, he got like 20 goals, and that was when Leeds and other clubs should have really bought him when he was at his peak. Now he's a 29-year-old on the downslide. I remember he used to be at Bolton, and he wasn't that good there. I don't know, you know a player's bad when you've got the sub.
Mm. Yeah, I never understood that personally. I mean, all it does is damages a player's confidence. It was the same with Moyes Keane at Everton. You know, bringing him on and then bringing him off straight away. I don't get that. I mean, unless it was for some sort of injury, but I don't think it was in the 90th minute.
I mean, it was terrible.
Mm.
I think it's just a way of saying you were terrible today and just sort of letting the player know without having a word with them.
But all it does is damage a player's confidence, that.
Although that,
you know, look at what it did to Moyes Keane.
Yeah. Well, they have got... I think they should look into playing that Ian Paveda more, because he was standout when he...
Mm.
If anyone was going to get a goal on the pitch, it looked like it was going to be Paveda. Mm. Sheffield United didn't really carve out much of a chance for themselves. And it always did look like Leeds were going to win it, and wasn't much of a surprise that you know, they eventually broke the deadlock.
Mm, yeah, I mean, I don't know what it is about this Sheffield United side. They just all seem knackered. I feel like they put in such a big effort last season. They all, you know, performed really well. They all did their jobs exceptionally well. But they all just seem absolutely shattered. And I mean, you know, the new players that have come in, you know, we haven't seen Jane Bogle and Max Lowe in the league. I feel like they could... or should be in contention to start the next game anyway for Sheffield United. But I think against the forwards just haven't looked great. You know, that has always been their problem. But, you know, you'd think, you know, Ollie McBurney, I'm actually a decent fan of. You know, I feel like if he had a decent player alongside him, that he would do good. And Ollie Burke, I think he's a decent player. I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't think he's, you know, extraordinary, but I feel like he could do well in that Sheffield United team. McGoldrick, I'm not a fan of, it's shite. And Billy Sharp is far too old for you having to rely on him in the Premier League to score goals.
You can say that about Jamie
Vardy. Yeah, but Jamie Vardy has adapted his game. He's, you know, still a top quality striker. He, you know, he got the golden boot last season.
So far too old.
Well, you wouldn't. I wouldn't want to have to rely on Jamie Vardy. You know, because what happens if, you know, he drops off halfway through the season?
James.
Yeah, but that's because Leicester don't rely on Vardy. Yeah, I mean, this Sheffield United side, you know, there's somewhat obviously up with them. I don't think they'll go down, but, you know, I don't know. There's somewhat up with them.
Hopefully Chris Wilder isn't sacked, because I think he's a phenomenal manager.
I doubt that he will be sacked. I feel like he's taken him up from League One. So I feel like, you know, the owners realise how much that he means to Sheffield United and how crucial he was to getting them into the position where they are now, as well as last season's amazing performance. So I doubt that the owners will sack him.
Aren't they backed by quite a...
I don't know exactly how it works. I think it's sort of similar to the Crystal Palace thing, where they have, you know, their old owners running day-to-day, you know, the day-to-day business.
Mm-hmm.
But the Saudis are basically pumping money into
it. They should look into getting a... That's their main issue, because defensively and in goal, they seem good, because despite having so many chances given away to Leeds, they only lost one. And Ramsdale kept 8 potential goals out of them.
Mm.
Which isn't even a record. The record, I think, is Tim Krul, 14 versus, I think that. But you shouldn't be conceding 8 shots.
No, no, I don't think they should. They just, something about them looks off, and I'm not sure what. As for Leeds, I mean, they've got Man City next. They could definitely do something against Man City. Yeah. I mean, we'll get onto Man City in a bit, but they don't exactly look at their best, Man City, and I can definitely see Leeds pulling off a result.
Let's get into the contra.
Yes. Well, it's a lot of bollocks, isn't it? Eric Dier wasn't even facing Andy Carroll. You know, are you meant to jump with your arms by your side? It's absolute rubbish. You know, he was facing the other way. He was facing the other way. It's a load of rubbish, honestly, man. Like, if you jump, you will lift your arms. That's just how the human body works. Like, oh, it's just so bad. Like, what is the point of the rule change? Like, football is a simple game. Like, honestly, you know, rule changes like this are what's ruining football, honestly. Like, it's just an awful, shocking decision.
I may or may not have celebrated this goal.
Well, no, I'm sure you did, because it, you know, it was in favour for Chelsea, and I would do the same thing. But even Steve Bruce came out and said that it probably shouldn't have been.
Yeah. Well, Wilson, he had a job to do. He's still done it. I just wonder if other players would purposely miss it.
Mm.
I don't know. When it comes to the Premier League, you don't really.
No. I mean, you know, if I was a player, I wouldn't be mourning. I'd probably mourn after the match, but, you know.
Man, changes are definitely.
Yeah, I mean.
Old rule.
What's that?
Just revert back to the old rule. What was the issue with
I know. But I can't see him doing it mid-season. I think we're going to be stuck with a season like this, to be honest with you. It's very, very rare that rule changes happen mid-season.
Didn't we see it with VAR didn't get introduced until the knockout stages of the Champions?
Was it not in the group stages?
I think it was.
I might be wrong. I thought it was. But, you know. Anyway, whether it did or it didn't, the fact remains that the rule definitely should be changed. But as for this actual game, what did you make of it? I mean, you know, in my opinion, you know, Spurs definitely deserve the win, in my opinion. They're absolutely dominant over Newcastle.
Yeah, so maybe there is a lot of blame on Spurs to have killed the game off within the 90 minutes, because they had 23 attempts, 12 on target, and forced 11 saves out of Carl Darlow.
Yeah, Darlow was an absolute madness. I mean, you know, with Dubravka out injured, they definitely needed Darlow to step up. And he definitely did during this game.
I feel like Newcastle have always had good goalkeepers, but a shit defense.
Mm.
Tim McGraw, Dubravka, Darlow. Didn't they have Steve Harper?
I think so.
Yeah, just, they need someone like a Fabrizio Colaccini.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the role that Federico Fernandez currently occupies.
Yeah, he just lacks in the goal department because Colaccini 2 goals from the corners.
Oh, yeah.
I like Fabian Scher, but he's nowhere to...
Yeah, well, I think the problem with Scher is he'd probably be better off deployed as a midfielder, actually, Scher, than a defender. Defensively, yeah, he is quite suspect, but going forward, he is actually a decent little player.
Mm. Yeah, I'd play him over Isaac.
Mm.
Also, I played Yedlin over Mancini. I thought Yedlin was really good last season.
What's that, sorry?
I thought I'd play Yedlin over Mancini because I thought Yedlin was really good last season.
I don't know about Yedlin. He has on and off days. I think it's the same with Kraft as well. You know, they seem to be inconsistent, the both of them, whereas Mancini, even though he's probably not as good a player of them, he's the most consistent.
Mm. And I don't like Richie playing left back.
That's more out of necessity at the moment. I mean, neither Wilhelms or Rose came back from loan, and Lewis apparently picked up a knock, which was why he didn't start this game. So that was more out of necessity at left back.
Okay. Heung-min Son wasn't all that decent.
Yeah, that's what I've been saying about Son. He's a very inconsistent player.
I think Spurs have been handed a really tough set of cards because they, for example, they've had to play this one, then they've got to play, then they've played Chelsea, and then literally tomorrow they play Hapoel, Maccabi, I think.
The games are coming thick and fast.
Yeah, and they've not only got to play Europa League, they've got to qualify for it.
Exactly, yeah. So there's no let up for these Spurs players. And I feel like for Spurs, the sooner that Gareth Bale is fit, the better.
And they're still looking for that backup striker.
I mean, could Gareth Bale potentially play that role? I mean, they've given him the number 9 shirt, which is one traditionally worn by forwards. And we have seen him play as a centre-forward towards the end of his time at Spurs and at Real Madrid. We saw him slotting as a centre-forward, as a sort of false nine role, potentially. But I could see him slotting there, just as well, if not better, than the likes of Son and Lucas do already.
Yeah, but this isn't the Bale of
2011. No, I mean, it's not even the Bale of 2017. It's an older, more jaded Gareth Bale who hasn't had, any game time last season, so he's got to be lacking in match sharpness. But on his day, Gareth Bale is a damn good player.
Yeah, I think you need a partner on that.
Well, it depends, because they could deploy him in a front three with Son and Lucas either side of him. But, we'll see when he gets fit how Jose decides to deploy him, because it's safe to say that he will start. Spurs will not want to be paying 300 grand a week for a player to sit on the bench.
No.
Especially when they don't even give Harry Kane free. Anyway, do you want to move on? Have you got what else to say on Newcastle Spurs?
No.
No, I mean, so we can move on to the first time that Pep Guardiola has ever conceded 5 goals. Leicester just absolutely tore them a new one. This is the first time that Pep Guardiola has conceded 5 goals in a game.
Yeah, in 686 managers. That's a lot of games to not get.
And to say that both Pep Guardiola and Rodri came out and said, oh, they play defensive football.
What?
They played the wrong way. No, they played the fucking right way because they won 5-2. You like the way they won because they
scored 5. That doesn't make sense.
Leicester didn't do that.
City needs new defenders. 3 of their back 4 gave away 3 penalties. Ake can only be sort of, redeemed in the fact that he scored, even though it was consolation. And he didn't give away a penalty. But, their bench is so terrible. They had to bring on that Leon Delap.
That's Rory Delap's son, that.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh. And then they had to bring
find it funny that Rory Delap's son played in a Pep Guardiola team. If you think of Pep Guardiola's style of football, the last person you'd associate with that is Rory Delap.
Yeah, so they had to make 2 subs, one of which was a youngster. Because I don't know why they didn't bring on Zinchenko or Laporte when they were clearly shit at the back. And I can't believe Eric Garcia is linked to Barcelona.
Well, if you're losing defenders, then you don't really want to bring a defender on, do you? You want to be more attack-minded.
Well, you do need to concede 5. Damage control.
And as for Eric Garcia being linked to Barcelona, well, they seem to be making all sorts of bad decisions as of late, so...
I suppose they don't bring in fucking Boateng back.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he's on to Monza, which is Berlusconi.
Ah, right.
Yeah. They're a new team that they're going to be the new Leipzig.
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
What, do they have big backing or something?
Yeah, they have Berlusconi.
Oh, yeah.
Former Italian Prime Minister and famous for his bunga bunga. Do you know what they are?
Yes, I'm not thick.
This was just pretty much just a penalty shootout across 90 minutes for Vardy, wasn't it?
It was just poor. I mean, do you think any of them weren't penalties though?
No.
Exactly.
I thought City were going to win it because Mahrez with that with a beautiful curler in the back of the net. City were all over him in the first sort of half an hour. I thought they really did deserve more than that, just that one. So maybe we could have been talking about a closer scoreline. But after once it hit that 30-minute mark, I suppose Leicester kicked themselves out of it, won a penalty, and Vardy blasted them into the... And that second goal he scored, he doesn't even know how he scored it himself.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's hard. I think Harvey Barnes had a really good game as well. You know, we've seen him playing not only as a, you know, a tricky winger who's able to, you know, cut inside, get into the box, get a shot off, but also we saw his creative vision, you know, to make some excellent through balls to Jamie Vardy. I'm really liking the way that Harvey Barnes is evolving his game under Brendan Rodgers.
James Madison's goal was beautiful.
Oh, yeah, sensational. I mean, he's not featured much this season due to injury, but he's still a quality player. You know, there's a reason that, you know, there's comparisons to the likes of Jack Grealish, you know, and there's reasons why people are talking about Madison in terms of the England team. Because he is a quality number 10 / wide player.
He gets comparisons to Grealish. I think he's better than Grealish, personally.
Really? Would you say that?
Yeah, I think he is, personally.
I don't know. I feel like Grealish has a lot of qualities that Maddison doesn't. I feel like if you swap Grealish and Maddison, you put Maddison at Aston Villa and you put Maddison at Villa and you put Grealish at Leicester... Can Maddison take Villa by the scruff of the neck to survival like Grealish did? I don't think they could.
He did it with Norwich.
What's that?
He did it with Norwich.
No, he didn't. Did he?
Yeah. I'm looking at it here. 44 games for him, 14 goals in one season.
Oh, we got him promotion, yeah.
Yeah, well, you could say that about Grealish. You got them.
No, but what I'm saying is, would Villa have survived with Maddison instead of Grealish?
Yeah. I'd say so.
I mean, I'll disagree with you there. I mean, don't get me wrong, Maddison is a quality player. I just feel like Grealish is able to take control of a game better, whereas Maddison can be a really good part of a really good unit.
Yeah, but Grealish has his downfalls in the fact that he's very aggressive and likes to get booked often.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, they're two different... traits in terms of players is that Grealish has to be aggressive at the end of the day because he is by far the best player in the Aston Villa team. You know, without Grealish putting in the effort, Villa would have been relegated last season. No doubt in my mind about that.
Yeah, City were terrible and they've now signed Ruben Diaz. I don't know, but in return, they got rid of Otamendi. So despite lacking in defensive numbers, they've pretty much just kept the same amount of numbers and paid out 50-odd million or whatever it was.
But Ruben Diaz is an improvement on Otamendi. And when you think about the people who can play centre-half, Laporte, Stones, Rodri, Fernandinho, now Ruben Diaz, Nathan Aki and Eric Garcia, does Nicolas Otamendi get in ahead of any of them? Maybe you could argue Garcia, but that's it. I mean, questions do have to be asked about Pep Guardiola's spending, especially on defenders, because I think that takes into about £300 million that he spent on...
Hey, did you say 300? I thought it was 400.
It might be 400. I might have got my stats wrong. Yeah, but it's definitely a lot of...
Yeah, I don't think there's much else to add.
Not really. I mean, you know, Leicester again looking, you know, really impressive. It'll be interesting to see how they're doing this season's Europa League. Yeah. And, you know, keeping on the theme of shocks, you know, West Ham beating Wolves 4-0. Well, I don't think many people would have had that on the record.
No, that's true. Well, I don't know what the hell happened to Wolves. Do you?
No, I mean, it's... Oh, I don't know. There's just something up with them. Like, what... I mean, don't get me wrong. The performance of Jared Bowen, you know, as an individual and West Ham as a whole have to be applauded. They played really well, West Ham. You know, they took their chances where they had. They hit Wolves really well on the break. And overall, they defended well as well in that back five. However, you know, like, Wolves were also awful.
I hope they don't revert back to their pre-Premier League days. Well, you know, well, when they had, like, Mick McCarthy. I doubt that will happen, but maybe... Maybe they need to start looking into a new strategy, maybe. Maybe I feel like West Ham maybe got them sussed. And that was an awful debut for Nelson.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it was absolutely torn apart. But, yeah, it just feels like, you know, this Wolves team does seem a lot weaker than last season's Wolves team. And they haven't necessarily, you know, sold anyone. You know, they sold Jota and they sold Doherty. They've loaned out Morgan Gibbs-White to Swansea. And they've brought in, you know, Vitinha, Fabio Silva, and Nelson Semedo, as well as Kiana Hoover. But I don't know, they don't seem, in terms of on paper at the very least, they don't seem as strong as last season.
Yeah, I mean, Doherty and Jota are two very important players, and I think Morgan Gibbs-White is a very capable rotation player, but maybe some players have their eyes on other teams because of the performance they put in last season, where they're just waiting on some sort of way to departure. For, like, for example, Jimenez was linked to Man United.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, we had seen a lot of paper talk. There was never any credible sources reporting that. I don't know. It's just an awful game overall for Wolves. I mean, you know, next, Wolves have Fulham, so, you know, they should be bouncing back there. And if they struggle against Wolves, then they do have some serious problems on their own.
Yeah.
Because I think the issue with this Wolves team is that, you know, you look at a lot of them and they've been there, you know, the majority of 3, 4, 5 seasons. You know, apart from Neto and Nelson Semedo, there's not too many, you know, fresh blood, you know, injections into that side. And I'm wondering if that's what they need. Someone who, you know, a, you know, proper, solid, you know, 30, 40 million pound player like Raul Jimenez was, to come straight into that side and give him an extra spark.
I mean, as things are going, they're going for a relegation battle, but I doubt that will happen, I think.
No, I mean, we are only 3 games.
Very firmly in mid-table, which is a major...
Yeah, especially considering, you know, before this transfer, you know, they'd spent £200 million in the Premier League. So, you know, they should be involved in European battle, and it looks like they're already going to be chasing.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, not the position you want to be in.
I mean, they've got a few games coming up where they could definitely take points, the likes of Fulham, Leeds, Newcastle and Palace. I feel like they're missing their fans a lot because they were some of the loudest at Molineux and they make quite an atmosphere.
Mm.
Whereas West Ham are excelling without their fans. Kind of weird considering the stadium they have.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that, you know, I think a lot of Premier League teams are feeling. I mean, there are only 2 teams that won at home this game week. And, you know, some teams are going to be affected more than others when it comes to fans not being. And Wolves could certainly be one of them.
Yeah. How important fans are, and we kind of took them for granted.
What's that?
Just saying, like, it just shows how important fans are and how they were taken for granted. Oh.
Yeah,
and it really does really, you know, show what the 12th man moniker is. Should we get into Bayern Munich versus Fulham?
Yeah. Jesus Christ, Fulham look dire.
Fucking Aston Villa look like 1982 Villa.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether that was because of the performance of Villa or just how bad Fulham were. But it was definitely an impressive showing from Aston Villa, who have won their first 2 league games.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking about him before, Jack Grealish. He was incredible in this game. I mean, if you had any doubts about him, he was like a Toni Kroos in the middle. Just such great passing. John McGinn did like a Zidane pirouette. It was like watching some super team. It was it was insane.
Mm.
Did you see the pirouette that he did?
Oh yeah, absolutely beautiful. You know, I think the whole Villa team had a really good game. I really liked Ollie Watkins up front as well. Didn't get too many chances himself, but created quite a lot for you know others to finish off. You know, McGinn and Houlihan in the middle of the park as well played really well. Both fullbacks, Matty Target and Matty Cash, put in some you know brilliant crosses into the box. You know, and you know even Martinez, you know he didn't have that much to do, but he dealt with what he needed to deal with. And yeah, just a very impressive performance from Villa, which contrasted to the very shite performance from Fulham.
Mm, yeah, agreed. I think they got a goal unfairly disallowed. Do you?
I mean,
I think
I could see both sides to it.
Yeah.
But I feel like you know, if I was a Fulham fan, I'd feel aggrieved. But if I was a Villa fan, I'd say it was the right decision. I can see both sides to it. I think if I had to lean one way or another, I would say it was probably a little bit harsh. But I can see why it was given. It's not a completely ridiculous decision.
I thought Tyrone Mings did look really, really good. He looked like a player that should be getting a call-up for England. I know it's just one game, but getting a goal and really just being like a wall at the back. I mean, Fulham were basically having to take attempts from outside the box until that goal that got...
Mm.
And Villa let Fulham play their game, just passing about but causing no such threat, and then punished them when they saw fit. Could have really been double figure.
Mm. Oh, yeah, very easy.
Is there much else?
I mean, not really, to be honest. I feel like it was, you know, just a very dominant performance from Villa. I mean, do you want to move on to the Liverpool game?
Yeah. Well, this was another game where it really should have been double figures. Liverpool made this game like playing Twister with a quadruple amputee. Just really, really easy.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, a very visual metaphor there from you, Harry. But, you know, I think we all got the message. It was a very dominant performance from Liverpool.
Mm. the goal from Lacazette was just a cluster of errors, and Lacazette, despite fluffing it, somehow got it in the back of the net.
Mm.
Really, really against the run of play. And then Mane rectifies the injustice just a couple minutes later. And then they got another one through Robertson, who actually
makes up for his error. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think they should have went on to score a couple more before the half. They forced 5 saves out of Leno in the game. In the first half, they had 11 shots at goal, 5 of which were on target. And then Arsenal had 3, 2 on target, one of which would have been the Lacazette goal. And then Jota came on and scored an amazing goal where Leno was frozen solid. It was that good.
Mm. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Diogo Jota. I think he's a very good player. I think they actually picked up a bargain there, did Liverpool. I mean, you know, he was roughly the same price that they paid for Salah and Mane for, and they proved out to be, you know, immense bargain. So, yeah, I'm a huge fan of Diogo Jota. It fills in a position that they need, which was back up for Salah and Mane. You know, should one of them get injured, they would have to put in, you know, Origi or Minamino or Shaqiri there. And they're just not the same sort of quality as Mane and Salah. And next season, when those two have to leave for 2 months to go to AFCON, Jota is a more than capable stand-in for one of the two.
I think he's going to look towards getting one of their spots. There's a lot of competition. Or even, I really don't. I think if you're going to pick a flaw out in that Liverpool team, it's Firmino.
Mm, yeah, I mean, I understand the role that Firmino plays. I understand why Jurgen Klopp is a fan of Firmino. And I understand, you know, what Firmino brings to the team. However, if Liverpool had in absolutely deadly number nine there, I feel like they would be unstoppable. You know, could you imagine if they didn't sell Danny Ings? If they didn't sell him to Southampton and last season's Danny Ings played up front for Liverpool instead of Southampton, they would just have run away with the league, and they could have gone unbeaten.
Well, could you imagine him in that Liverpool team? He probably would have got double the 22 he got.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I'm surprised they're not going in for him, but I suppose given the bad experience he had with them, and I don't know why Klopp has such a hard-on with Firmino. He should sort of be looking elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, I understand the role that Firmino plays, but I feel like you could get better than Firmino. It's as simple as that. Maybe even shifting Firmino back to a number 10 and playing a striker up top. I mean, there's no real need to change the system that worked so well for Liverpool last season. But yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Firmino. Like,
they don't have a recognised striker, do they?
Well, I mean, they've got Origi. And
he's 25, I've got his own.
Origi, yeah. We came in quite a few years ago, did Origi? Because he got loaned out to Wolfsburg, I want to say.
Yeah.
And, you know, as well, they also have Rian Brewster.
No.
No? I don't know. I think he played.
I think they ought to try Jota.
I mean, I think Brewster played quite well last season for Swansea. I don't know. I thought it was decent.
But the thing is, I don't think that the Liverpool are going to make any more signings because they seem a bit...
Yeah. I mean, considering they've signed Jota, Thiago, Tsimikas, yeah. Yeah, I can't see them making too many more dealings unless more outcomings all happen. You know, I mean, we talk about Wilson. Brewster is potentially on his way at Sheffield United. We're also seeing Gruitch being linked with a move away. And there's someone else as well who I cannot remember for the life of me.
Well, Karius went to Union Berlin.
Yeah. Might have just been those three. But I think that...
Ismail Assar. Why do you keep going in for wingers?
Well, they're needing backup for Salah and Mane. I think that's the main thing. Especially when... what's it? You know, Salah and Mane have to go to AFCON in the middle of next season.
I know they're going to be without Thiago for a bit because he's got coronavirus.
He's got corona, yeah, don't they?
But they've got Minamino, they've got Jota, they've got Harvey Elliott, and they've got Origi. I think even if you take away Salah or Mane, I think they're definitely capable of still winning the
game.
I think the title's going back to for now.
I think Man City just haven't improved enough in terms of the transfer market, and Chelsea lack a top-level coach. I think that's the reason, essentially, why Liverpool are going to win the league. Probably not as easily as last season.
Really?
No, I don't think we're going to see Liverpool storm ahead. But I can see Liverpool, you know, easily winning it by like 10 points or something.
Do you think Leicester could go for a push potentially?
Maybe. I mean, we did see last season up until around about December time. We did see Leicester essentially being Liverpool's biggest, title contenders until Liverpool beat them 4-0, and that essentially knocked them out of title. It'll be interesting to see if Leicester do kick on. I mean, we've seen them brought in Cengiz Under, Wesley Fofana, and Timothy Castagne.
He has been
really good. I'm a big fan of his. So it will be interesting to see if they could push for the title. I do think it's probably a stretch at this moment. But we'll see. I mean, they proved they proved against Man City that, you know, they're capable of beating the big teams. And should, you know, Man City, Man United, Chelsea, Spurs, Arsenal, they all be not at their top level, then, you know, there's no reason why Leicester couldn't, you know, be the ones closest to Liverpool.
maybe Dark Horse?
Yeah, they do look very impressive, Everton. But I do think it's probably a little bit too early to call them title. I mean, I still think that that defence is very, very shaky. I'm not a fan of Pickford in net. And Mean and Keane can be caught out quite easily. I mean, we saw that against West Brom, that they were both caught out for their first goal. And, yeah, I don't think that they'll be title contenders this season.
That was a collective fault. Everyone was backing up.
Mm.
That was insane. Why the players were just basically running away from it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's pretty much it. Unless there's any other, you know, goings on that you want to talk about.
Yeah. What the hell did Chelsea loan out Ross Barkley?
Yeah. I mean, it was either Drinkwater or Barkley that thingy was going in for Villa. And obviously, Barkley was the priority for, you know, obvious reasons. Barkley, I think he's a good player on his day. It's just his day doesn't happen soon enough. I can definitely see that he offers a lot more than Dyer Drinkwater does. And I think he could potentially be a good signing. Because to be honest with you, I don't even think he'll start for Villa. I think he'll be back up for McGinn and Grealish and Douglas Luiz.
Personally, I'd start him because he's our most direct.
Mm.
And would have loaned out RLC and sold Kland. And we need Pulisic.
Yes. I feel like if you are going to play Werner or Mount out wide, you need to play Hudson-Odoi and Pulisic, or Pulisic, one of them two, to, you know, make sure that the box isn't as congested as it is with Mount, Abraham and Werner.
Yeah, that's basically.
Mm. Yeah. Right, well, I mean, that's it. It's probably a little bit shorter of an episode than usual. But, you know, not a bad thing. You listen to our voices for less time. I don't think many people would moan about that. Yeah, I mean, you can follow the outro is usually so smooth and I bottled it today.
Totally Mr. Potato Hedge.
I really fucked it. Right, let me start this again. You can follow... bastard. fuck's sake, you do the outro.
You can follow the Anti-Football Podcast on Twitter at AFPod. Am I correct there?
No, you're not. We both fucked it.
Is it not AFPod?
Oh, you can follow us on Twitter at AntiFootballPod.
Damn it!
That's it. We're going to stop talking now.